imagined,
and then there was nothing like that
in South Africa,
in Cape Town, where I studied.
Do they have many people from Nigeria in South Africa too, or
not in the part of South Africa where I lived?
Or you just don't know because they don't have the community.
But I know that in Johannesburg, mm-hmm. there were a lot of Nigerians in Johannesburg, but right. I don't know whether they have a platform where they meet.
I see.
But here, when I came, in fact, before I could come to Canada, somebody told me that you will meet a very vibrant Nigerian community right. in Canada, and in Vancouver in particular.
Right.
And when I came, I discovered that it was true. And then you meet people of other African descent as well.
Yes.
You know, and then so we just feel we are brothers and sisters.
Yes.
And we interact at that level.
Right. Can I ask, because we know that English is the main language that's spoken or used in Canada. And from what I heard, South Africa also speaks, like, people speak English there. Is Nigeria, like, in Nigeria, people speak English? Is that the natural skill or is that a pickup skill later on?
So Nigeria is a multilingual nation, but, you know, we were colonized by British, so our official language is English.
Official language is English in Nigeria.
Yes, in Nigeria.
Oh.
And then in South Africa, too, they have different... So it depends on which province you are in.
Mm.
If you are in, maybe in the Eastern Cape, they speak more of Xhosa.
Mm.
But the official language is also English.
Right.
But they recognize those other languages as well. So if you are in the other side of, like the KwaZulu-Natal, they speak mostly Zulu.
Mm.
And then if you are in the Western Cape, they speak mostly Afrikaans and Xhosa as well.
Mm.
But the official language, what they speak at work,
is English.
Is English.
So language is not...
The language of instruction is also English.
I see.
But they also you must do at least one South African language. Mm.
Yeah. So you have your dialogue.
You have to pass it as well. In their final exam, those who are in high school, they have to pass it.
Right.
When they write their matric.
Mm. So English is not... or let's say there's no actual language barrier when you move through one country to another from your journey. However, the culture or some kind of unspoken cultural thing, it
yes.
could be the barrier and let's say hardships, right? For people who are moving from one place to another, especially cross countries and cross continents. Sorry for my ignorance, but for people who are from Asia, right, we have some understanding towards to North America because we watch Hollywood movies, we listen to Billboard's musics, right? So
yes.
we know a lot about the U.S., we know a lot about Canada, but we lack of the knowledge of what's going on in Africa. When you talk about you feel more welcomed and the diversity, the friendly people you met in Canada is amazing, and it's even more, a lot more, it's just a higher level than your experiences in South Africa, which got me confused because I thought they're both in Africa, and people looked a little more alike. So I thought that would be like, oh, I actually feel more familiar with you because we both have
the same color.
Yeah. So I thought like, okay, I feel like less barrier between us. So it sounds like it's not the case.
Yeah. So there was no language barrier.
Mm.
Cultural barrier is there because even though we have the same skin, but we're from different countries.
Mm.
So different orientation, sometimes even different beliefs.
Mm.
So, but there was not really cultural shock, so to say.
Right.
Because at least the language unites us, right?
Mm.
the main language of instruction unite us. So at your place of work, you can communicate with people in English and things like that. But because the environment where I was, they don't interact much with Nigerians.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it was like, for some of them, they were having a very close contact with a Nigerian for the first time.
Mm.
So you can imagine that. So there were some stereotype already based on maybe the what they hear in the media and things like that.
Mm.
So having to interact with a Nigerian very closely, it was like they were having a new experience.
Right.
So, and before I left South Africa, I had a lot of friends who, by their interaction with me, got to see somebody that is different from what the media tends to portray.
I see.
You know, so based on that, that reception was not there. People want to watch you first. They want to see whether the things we've heard, the things we've read is true, because some of them were interacting with a Nigerian for the first time.
Oh, right.
Yes, because the part of the country, because I was in Western Cape, right? Yes, so at the Western Cape, I was in Cape Town.
Right.
So there are Nigerians in Cape Town quite well, but I was in the research in academia. So some of the people I was interacting with, they had not interacted with a Nigerian very closely.
Oh, I see.
Yes, the Nigeria they know is what the media tells them, that this is who Nigerians are.
I see. So the media is not as trustworthy there?
Yes. So now they're having first-hand experience with the Nigerians. So they needed to watch and see whether I am relatable. You know, things like that.
So you became the window to your friends.
Yes. Yeah. So they don't know, okay, oh, there's another side of Nigeria that we didn't know, and things like that.
Right.
Yeah. So, and before I graduate, a lot of the lecturers were saying, we want to take Nigerian students and things like that, because there's something that set us apart. We're hardworking.
I see. I wonder, is there many Chinese people in Nigeria that you met, or in South Africa? Do you, because that the Asian people would look very different there.
There are a lot of Chinese people in Nigeria.
Oh.
And the town where I did my undergraduate, we had a lot of them.
Oh.
And then when my wife was traveling with our son, when they were coming to meet me in South Africa, my son made a friend with a Chinese man on the plane.
Oh.
And they boarded the plane together in Abuja, and they became very friendly.
Right.
You know, and all through the journey,
right,
my son was very friendly to
the Chinese.
The Chinese
person. You don't have to feel pressure to say good thing about Chinese just because we're last year meeting to Chinese platform.
No. I'm just telling you that they are there, and we've had contact with them. I have not really worked very closely with them. But we see them around. We both transport together. We go to places together.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So when you come to Canada and you realize that Canada is very diverse, but they turn to become ranked really high in terms of how friendly they are, how openness they are to the people from different countries, from different cultures, right?
Yes.
And what is your work experiences in this? Because it's a very niche area, right? Not so many people understanding this. And then I guess if you only make friends with Nigeria community or with your colleagues, that would probably not enough for you to explore more. How did you find your way to explore more, or did you have this I would say the willingness to explore in Canada?
So in my research group, I'm the first African that they have hired.
Oh.
The first African
in the whole Africa continent?
Yes, in my research group.
Oh wow.
Not the lab, but in my research group, in the gamma spectroscopy group.
Okay.
I'm the first African that they have hired.
Okay.
So I don't get to relate much with other Africans in the same lab. There are a couple of them, but in different sections. So in my section, I'm the only African.
Right. Do you care?
So no, I didn't care because the nuclear physics field is like a global village.
Global village, right.
So even before I came to Canada, I had already met some of them at international conferences.
Oh, I see.
Yes. And then some of the other people that were hired after me, we had met in Europe during summer schools. We met already.
I see.
So it was not completely strange for me.
Okay.
Because I was meeting people that I have met before. In South Africa, I was just living in Nigeria. That was the first time traveling out of the country. And then I was entering an environment where you have, because it's a national lab, so there also you don't only have South Africans working there, but you have people from different continents as well working in the lab, because it's a national facility. So my supervisor at the lab is from England, and the people around, my HOD was a German. So there was a diverse community at the lab also. But because it was my first time traveling out, that's what I was telling you, that the experience I had here was a bit different. And then the church community, because I told you I'm a Christian, so I attend church. So in the church also, the first day we went to church, we were warmly received.
Right.
And then we became friends with the family that we sat behind them, and then during in the course of the service, we introduced ourselves.
I see.
And that was how we became very close up to today.
Right.
So there was already, you know, an environment where we have something in common, binding us together.
Right.
So based on that, my experience, you know, was very, 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 very good.
Okay, so it sounds like when you explore this opportunity, now you are more professionally dive deeper into this area, like kind of vertically, right? And I guess before you find, this is exactly what I want to do specifically, this is what I know, so that I'm going to the conferences, which is a kind of small group of people in the world, though I know that I kind of get the industry information from those people, so I know where to go to. But before we dive deep vertically to find opportunities and information, I guess we have to do the exploration kind of horizontally, let's say, just wide range of looking forward to opportunities. Is that what happened to you as well?
Yeah, so when we attend conferences, and we attend experiments, because I attended experiments in Australia twice.
Right.
And my supervisor, who hired me in here, was in Australia in one of those days that I was also there for my experiment. That's why I was telling you that the nuclear physics community is like a global village. It's not that it's a small community, but because the research we do thrives based on collaboration.
Right.
We collaborate a lot. So when I do my experiment, I invite people from Europe, I invite people from Africa, I invite people from South America, you know, I invite people from the States.
Right.
Come for my experiments.
So I feel like before, a lot of friends, right, they are few steps after you. Right. So you are here, that you know your position, you know what you are good at in this specific field. But do you have any advice for people who are looking for the opportunities? They don't even know what is the village that I should go to. What is my area? Where should I find information and opportunity from colleagues? Because I don't even have colleagues yet. How did you explore? How can those people learn from it?
Yeah, so if you are in graduate school, I will advise that you attend conferences.
Right.
I was exposed, I had a very good supervisor, so he exposed me a lot. I went to a lot of international conferences.
Mm.
So that is where you build your network.
Mm.
And then when you graduate, you begin to leverage on the network you have built
right. While
you are in graduate school.
Mm.
So when you attend conferences, you make presentations, and then people get to know you.
Mm.
So when you begin to look for opportunities, people can make referrals.
I see.
You know, so
being seen is very important.
Yes, and then when they know what exactly you are doing, the kind of skills you have,
they don't just
want to judge you based on what you put in your CV, right?
Mm.
So when you make presentations, even if the person who is hiring you was not there, there may be somebody who knows the person that knows him, you know, and things like that.
Right.
And then you can also leverage on your supervisor's network as well.
Right.
Yes. So because I did nuclear physics, but nuclear physics is broad.
Mm.
So specifically what we study is the structure of the atomic nucleus.
Mm.
And we study this by measuring the energy that the nucleus releases.
Right.
So there is an aspect that is called electron spectroscopy.
Okay.
So not many people are into that.
Mm-mm. I see.
So that was what set me apart.
I see. So for people who just start to explore, like they could be students, but they also could be adults. You know, a lot of people are looking for the new path to start their actual career, because especially for a lot of Chinese people that I know, we just follow the path what society tell us to do, right? But then later on, either they got laid off. There's a 35 years old kind of thing in China, like the company laid them off when they're 35, which is exactly the year or the area that you just get mature, you just get good at what you do, right?
If I was in China, I wouldn't be hired, Kina.
You won't.
Because if you fire somebody at 35, then I shouldn't be working.
Yeah, that's kind of ridiculous, right? But then
why do they do that? Is it because they feel you are old enough, you are old now, you should give space for the young ones?
It's a complicated, it's pretty complicated, because I would say for one thing, that is the government earlier, they would encourage corporate to hire graduates, students, like people who just graduated, because that can maintain, you know, you should give them opportunity because they don't have experiences, right?
Okay.
So you should help them out.
You should move to something else, maybe.
Right, but
then gives room. But they need those people to train the next generation, right?
Right.
So it's people in their 30s that should be the ones that will mentor the young ones. That's good.
Yeah.
So if they give space, then who will be there to mentor the young ones?
Yeah, but the thing is, like, you know, in China, there are many people, right? So they kind of, the corporate squeezes them really hard. So they feel like, when people turn to 35, 40, obviously you might be smarter, you might be more skillful and know more, a lot more than what you used to, but you really have a hard time to stay overnight and stay up really late.
Yes.
But the corporate want you to stay overnight, work till very late time, so you're not able to, then they just fire you.
Okay.
So that could be one of the reasons.
What
like I
business?
Said, it's a lot of factors.
There could be a lot of factors.
But
So now, for somebody from that kind of background,
mm-hmm.
when you come to Canada, you will now discover that here age doesn't matter, right?
Mm.
Age is not really a factor.
Mm.
It's not a determining factor whether you'll be hired or not.
Exactly.
You don't get fired when you are 35 or when you are 40.
No, it's not a problem.
There's not a problem here.
Yeah.
So you can see why. So if you're coming from that kind of background into an environment where your age is not a barrier.
It's not. Actually, I find people here in North America, they prefer people who are more senior. They prefer people who, a little bit more mature, how to deal with human interaction. And also be skillful and know more about how to do the job, right?
Yeah.
So that could be one thing. However, I would see that in the current AI era, and there's a lot of leverage. You have social media, right? You literally can start to get exposed and being seen from your phone, and you can just do, you don't have to have a big team. You can just use AI tools and learn things quickly. So we can catch this opportunity to build our second path, right? And maybe our real life start from there. And also there are a lot of stay-at-home mom in China, let's say, then they start to realize that, oh, my value, my work is not being compensated fairly. So they wanted more, you know, just like contributions to the society by put themselves in the workplace.
Yes.
So they have hardships as well. That's why I said, oh, what if I'm not a student? I don't even know where I'm going, but then I still need to explore and eventually get to the position where I can attend certain conferences that know people in the same area.
Yes. Yeah, so my it's like I was more focused on people who are already
know what it is,
yeah, who are already maybe in research or in the academia and things like that. So,
yes.
So for people who are not in research or who are not...
they're just confused. They're lost.
Yeah. So, but there are skills that can take you to outside of China as well.
Yeah.
I know that there are a lot of skills, right?
I guess you don't have to go out of China, but then I understand what you mean.
Yeah. So... your skills is what nobody can take away from you.
Yes.
They can fire you, but if you have your skills, you can move on with your skills, right?
Mm.
So when you develop skills, the skills may be through computing or maybe using AI to do stuff and things like that. So it's just a way of thinking out of the box.
Right.
Thinking that, okay, if this door closes, what happened? Because even myself, I keep asking myself that if... they take away my PhD certificate today.
Right.
How do I survive?
Right.
That's the question I keep asking myself.
Right. You keep asking
yourself. Yes, how do I survive?
You really have that risk management.
Yes, so I started cybersecurity.
Mm.
I started studying for cybersecurity.
Okay.
Because I told myself, without a PhD, what else can I do?
Mm.
How can I survive?
Right.
Things like that.
What is your answer?
So, and that was why I went into cybersecurity.
Mm.
Let me do something else. Apart from doing core research, let me do something else that even without the PhD, I should be able to either start my own company or, you know, be hired on part-time to provide part-time services and things like that.
Yeah, I think you're right about... the skill set, right? So sometimes maybe the job position will be gone, but then the skills and abilities are transferable. Maybe sometimes it's really hard to see just by ourselves, right? But then that's why some people have mentors, some people have people who have experiences like you or people who experienced this journey. They'd be like, oh, those are the skills, you can break it down. And then this can be applied to the current job position. There's a no forever security, I'd say.
Yeah. So I saw a comment, somebody say, what kind of conferences?
It depends on
which conference. There are a lot of conferences. So it depends on where your interest is.
Right.
So for me, I'm a nuclear scientist. So I look for conferences where, you know, the topics are related to what I'm studying.
Right.
You know, because that is where I will meet people in my area of specialization.
Right.
So if you are in the industry,
I believe there are
conferences also that you can look out for and attend, you know. So it depends on
where you are.
I believe that there's something out there that you can.
Yeah.
Because it's always good to meet people.
Yeah.
It's always good to, at times, leave your comfort zone, travel elsewhere. Because if you don't, you may not know, your understanding of the world is just where you are.
Right.
Yeah, so, but when you travel, even if it's not because you just want to stay out, you want to migrate.
Yeah.
But the opportunity of exploring and get to know what other people are doing in other part of the world is very, very important.
I agree. Like I said, also, it's looking for the information, collect the information, and analyze what information fits you is also ability, right? Once you gain that ability, then it doesn't really matter which area you are able to find relative conferences or networks, right? Yes. And I feel like there's so many things that we wanted you to elaborate, but then the time passed real fast. Is there any last thing you have to pick one last thing you share with our audiences, what it would be? You will come back. I guess you you know, I know you're at UBC. Maybe we'll be able to host a show there in the future. If we're there, I guess you will be very close to continue share more about your life experiences.
Yeah, so I don't know who may be listening to me now, but this issue of once you say that you are a physicist, people begin to look at you as somebody who is very smart,
right?
You know, but it doesn't have to be.
You don't have to be
smart to be a physicist. You just need to be inquisitive. You just be curious.
Curious.
Yeah, yeah.
You have just to keep on going.
Just have a curious mind, and then you will be a scientist. Because people ask,
scientist,
how do you get there? What does it take to become, you know, a nuclear scientist? You know, so it's just being able to ask the right questions, and then having a resilient mind.
Resilience, yes, and curiosity.
And curiosity and determination.
Determination.
Yes, and then,
I really appreciate that. I thought what you shared, tons of them could be elaborated. But this 1 hour was very meaningful and inspiring to our audiences, to me as well. And we look forward to learn more from you in the future when there's opportunity. And thank you so much for coming to our show. And also thank you to our audiences and for tuning in. Our show is called Comedy Negotiator. It's CJSF 90.1 FM if you are on Burnaby Mountain. And or you can go to cjsf.com.ca, or if you're Chinese audiences, you can watch us visually and through our 野蛮生长夏洛特, which is a Thursday 4 to 5 p.m. PST and Friday 7 to 8 a.m. in Beijing time. All right, I will see you next week. Thank you so much.